When I thought about July 4th recently, I've been wandering around a concept in my mind for quite a few months about today's talk, and I was inspired in the month of April, I believe it was, when I brought my 4-year-old and 2-year-old neighbor to the fellowship. And while we were in the children's playground for the activities for the kids, one of our members, MB Taylor, all of you have seen MB, she always is working on a knitting craft or some project as she sits calmly through all the services and even when she's with the children. And I always have so much admiration for people who can create such beautiful crafts from their hands. Her current project, I had her explain it to me and the girls, was boldly colored. It was soft. It was small. It had sort of a textured yarn, but it was still very soft to the touch. It was to be a sweater, to be small and mighty, and it would keep out the cold and keep in the warmth. I believe it was going out of state. It was going to be for a baby, a little boy, and it would make a new life feel secure. Inspired by a specific need in a child coming into this world, it would be an investment of MB's in caring, time, her talent, and her love. Those are all wonderful, comfortable things, and they're the kinds of things that I love to bury myself sometimes in my down comforter and sleep in on mornings or under a soft, fleecy blanket watching a movie. It's at times when there are unknowns that become overwhelming or so many things that I feel I can't control. Gratitude, especially in the last year and a half, has been one of the tools I've relied on. I was introduced by some gratitude concepts by my niece, and in seeking the comfort of doing whatever I can to share the joy with myself and with others and to bring peace, I like it. I like sharing gratitude. The theory is, and the research shows, that when you focus on things to appreciate, there's no brain space left for anger or sadness or worry. And when we practice those brain pathways over and over of gratitude and looking for things that are good, it becomes easier and easier for our brains to find things to appreciate. It's kind of like weightlifting. The more you work on your gratitude muscle, the stronger it becomes. Some of the research on volunteers on the studies showed that for folks who were practicing greater levels of gratitude, even just exercises a couple times a day of seeking things that they were grateful for, very specifically, they became happier and more optimistic over a short period of time. They felt more socially connected because often their gratitude was connecting them very really to social activities. They enjoyed better sleep, and they had fewer headaches. Sounds good, right? So over the last year, I've been practicing gratitude and sometimes forcing gratitude upon others. And I feel a little bit like I'm drifting toward complacency. Not that a higher power is in control, but I'm not really quite ready to put my remaining years on cruise control. It's certainly not the level of angst and need to get something done and make a difference that I felt when I'm in that gratitude and relaxed and peaceful space. In a complex world, our concerns must also yield actions and outcomes by way of caring, time, talent, and love, and not anger. And maybe that's where the gratitude piece helps to mobilize us. Action matters. But I also find that things are becoming more and more overwhelming, that it's taking a lot of courage to step up and make a difference. Putting away my fears by thinking about the positive is one healthy approach for me. But I can tell you I've put my finger on my greatest fear for our world, and that is global warming, a growing population, and not enough water. My fear is, and my challenge is really in connecting the dots so that I can instill the courage in a peaceful space to make a difference. One of the connecting of the dots I did was some research, And the Huffington Post recently summarized some Pew research on the economy, defense, the environment, and climate change. If left unchecked, and I'm quoting, global warming could lead to civil strife, economic stress, conflicts over water and other resources, mass migration, and increased terrorism. The connecting of the dots goes a little bit like this. Tensions mount because of the adverse effects of climate change, and therefore so does political instability, leading to more conflict, fundamentalism, and increased terrorism. One former captain of the Army, James Moran, said, it's like taking every hornet's worst nest that we already have around the world and shaking it up. Our lack of energy independence combined with climate change will pose an unacceptable high threat level, according to recent studies by retired military leaders, not just the scientists that we count amongst our members. We can be a better country. We can support, and I'm quoting, our troops by becoming more energy efficient, more sustainable, by using other forms of energy. It has to be something that all Americans are part of, retired Vice Admiral Dennis McKinn. So I think what that says is that protecting our troops means not deploying them. Training them perhaps to do something different, something more positive, something perhaps that's immediately providing solutions here and around the world. But I have to say, when I think of all of these things and how I might make a difference, in my cloak of gratitude, I'm feeling a little irrelevant. Last year, though, I read something that was very inspiring to me. Mary Pfeiffer, who many of you probably know of, has kind of become a guru of therapist at large to our culture, addressing a lot of stresses on family life. She wrote The Shelter of Each Other, and the low confidence crisis book about adolescent girls revising Ophelia. Her new book is about the most depressing crisis of all, the end of the world as we know it, through climate change. When you read the book, it's like everything else we've read. It's complex and interconnected. And it points out, it's not a pure science book about regions that are suffering immediate effects. Some people will be affected more immediately, some others may not so much. And so it's easy for some areas and people to be more concerned than others. And Mary says that we deal with this crisis just like we do through all human crises, through trauma, denial, and emotional paralysis. In my gratitude world, I think I'm in that sort of emotional paralysis, still trying to reach out and find something that I feel I can really be part of a difference. It will require that we face the most difficult of all human endeavors, facing despair. We've got to wake from our trance, face the pain and sorrow, accept the world, and live it intentionally, live our lives more intentionally. One of the things that is pointed out in the book and the way that this community gathered together in Nebraska, and it was really around the XL pipeline issue because it was going to cross into a lake that Mary and many of the people in her community enjoyed. In her case, it was in her youth. But growing into their potluck, monthly potlucks, and various events that they did, some of them enormous and some of them much smaller, was they attracted farmers whose rights were being violated. So it became a coalition of conservatives and liberals from all different areas of the spectrum who were all concerned about the issues of the pipeline. And one of the things pointed out was, don't waste your time talking to the converted, like me to you today. I'm hoping to inspire you, but I think the courage comes in when we can go out and face the non-believers and go out into small groups where the questions will be hard and stand our ground. How do you get the deniers to believe? How do you keep going when there's anguish with species dying out daily and corporate interests and media that are aligned against the cause or the science even? And how do you convince neighbors of the importance of local environmental issues? And how do we make a difference? And how do you resist, how do I resist, succumbing to the total numbing despair in the face of the demise of the planet. The more complicated it becomes, the more the slogan field simplistic discourse can creep in, especially for the non-believers. Politicians and media provide easy and useless answers like drill, baby, drill. One of the most obvious ploys on the mental teeter-totter, Pfeiffer notes, is attempting to oversimplify the issues and the solution. When our weapons and our financial resources funded by American taxpayers fall into the hands of radicals, as we've been hearing this past week, the munitions, the equipment, the transportation, and the money that is now in the hands of ISIS is enough, supposedly, what I've read, to support 200,000 troops. It makes me feel that a war that I opposed from the beginning and now makes no sense whatsoever. I can't connect the dots any longer. So I draw back and say, what is the fight that needs to be fought? It's really not who's in control in Iraq. It's a solution for our planet, for people to have food, to have water, to survive. Courage not to fight or flight, but to choose another course. The green boat is structured around the grieving model made famous by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. And in the Battle of the Keystone Pipeline, with a lot of other activists, they did great things like going to fairs and just setting up a booth and talking, getting time on a podium for small groups that become larger groups. And in the end, to pressure the governor when bills were on passing through the legislature, it was her and one other woman delivering cookies every week to the governor's mansion to make sure that their issue never slipped from top of mind. And eventually, through a connection, came a connection that got that appointment with the governor. When we unite with each other, educate ourselves, and importantly, share our despair and our hopes on the long, hard journey, we live deliberately and thoughtfully, not just through action, not just signing up and showing up, but debriefing and finding our pain, and through our internal community, do in-reach as well as outreach. It hurts to see the world in all the places where it's wounded, but Mary Pfeiffer says it also heals when we apply ourselves to healing the planet. I studied journalism in college, and when I moved here, I couldn't afford to buy a car to be a reporter for $4.75 an hour. So I went to work at the Carlsbad Library for $5.75 an hour. And one of the things that I always reflect on is the absence of the force of the state. As our media is shrinking, some of the messaging becomes easier to mold with sound bites, drill, baby, drill. And so with wisdom, we need to support local media. We need to have resources. We have hundreds of thousands of resources at hand. But there are many, many options spread over the breadth, and not very many of them accomplishing the depth, as journalists are not funded who do the accountability reporting. So for me, patriotism is a little bit beyond our borders. I'm wearing some kind of starsies and reds and blues today to feel very patriotic. But it really goes beyond the red, white, and blue. We're talking about our planet. And we're talking about what it'll take internally, because I've truly found I have to work on me first to build the courage to speak out. Every day we're hit by a tidal wave of information, yet our basic equipment, says Mary Pfeiffer, our bodies and brains haven't changed since the Neolithic era. We simply are not built to respond well. So as our web of life becomes tattered and torn, it's easy to become disconnected from emotions, bodies, and each other, and even the truth. In the United States, we must live to be healthy, and it requires that we weave a web of life around us. My faith sweater that will give me comfort and courage. Its colors will reflect your character, your joy, your creativity, your questions. Its threads will be strong from your wisdom, my faith community, from your experience and your great ideas. It won't have buttons or a zipper. I hope its openness will allow you to better know my soul. And it will hopefully allow my compassion to be revealed. It will never be finished, for it will be our engagement helping each other. Courageously confronting injustice. In that 2012 study that showed participants who volunteered regularly lived longer and happier lives, there was one caveat. Only if they lived altruistically, not for their own health. You have to be volunteering to help others, not just make yourselves feel better. So let's live intentionally. We'll stay socially connected on Sundays, but on beyond and beyond too, warding off loneliness and depression. We'll embrace some partners that aren't always at hand, Christians objecting to war, Catholics stepping up to action to have their voices heard, Unitarian Universalists divesting their $175 million endowment of fossil fuels. Gratitude will remain a tool, but not a mirror where I look into it and see someone smiling back. Rather, a lens which brings into sharper focus the challenges and the opportunities that will help me exercise courage. And like many of my favorite sweatshirts, my faith sweater will show the wear of principles lived. It will carry the memories of actions taken. Its shape will be distorted by those with whom I've shared its warmth or loaned its cover. And when the holes, I hope, appear, I'll reach out to you and ask that you help me retie the threads.